This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Peter McGillivray
and Jane Bolton.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now, Peter, you were a lecturer at Massey University very early on in its university days, weren't you?
Well, Massey had started in 1928. Yeah. I became a student there in 1949, and I joined the staff about 1958.
Okay.
I joined the staff.
So what, it was still an agricultural college then?
Agricultural college, Massey. Yeah. Agricultural College,
okay.
Part of the University of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And small numbers, and struggling to improve those numbers because Lincoln had been in operation for many years beforehand and covered the, particularly his strength was diploma type students, and also it had been offering degrees long, long before 1928, and some illustrious names were in those degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And when Massey started, the class of Massey in the 30s, and I often wondered later on, much later in the years, I often wondered what was it they had to learn from? What books did they have? For example, C.P. McMeekin, a student of Massey in the early 30s. What textbooks did they have when McMeekin was there? He became the world leader of animal production in research and teaching. And W.M. Hamilton, Bill Hamilton, the director of the DSIR. It was amazing what happened to those people from a very restricted background.
Yeah. So with Massey then, as an agricultural college, it was teaching just agriculture, it didn't broaden out with other...
Agriculture and horticulture.
Okay,
yes, it was quite strong in horticulture, and it was very much the poor relation to agriculture, of course, but it did some very good things with horticulture and turned out students who, two of whom I can think of. One is in Hawke's Bay, I don't know whether he's still with us or not, but... He developed a massive empire in apple growing up there.
Mm.
And the other one down in Levin with orchids, with lilies,
okay.
I'm sorry, yes.
Oh,
that's two that I can think of.
Okay.
And Dr. John Yates, he was the main person in horticulture. There was one day he came to give us a lecture. I don't know what botany it was. Yes, agricultural botany was the subject he was teaching, and he was very agitated in giving this lecture because we found out somebody must have asked him later on at the end of the lecture, he had posted a comb of one of his lilies to somebody in America, and it had gone missing, and it was worth £80. And in those days, £80 was a lot of money.
Yeah.
John Yates was quite a noted lily breeder and a noted horticulturalist.
Yeah.
He one of the book that he mainly used was by J.S. Yates, Farm, Trees and Hedges. And he'd gone around the country taking photos of hedges and all sorts of farm trees. So that was one of his main books to us, yes.
Okay. So was Massey, were Massey and Lincoln teaching the same sorts of things? Or?
Yes, they were teaching agricultural science degrees right through to PhD level and diplomas. And in the case of Lincoln, valuation, which was very important, the valuation section, because in the 30s, when the slump really hit, and the major turnaround was the establishment of a Labour Party and the State Advances Corporation. Now, the state, they were lending money to farmers, but then Herbert Castleberg was instrumental in starting the VFM, because they realised that the money, the government was putting out money,
VFM.
A lot of money, Valuation and Farm Management Diploma.
Okay.
And it, well, they do a diploma diploma in agriculture and then do another 2 years.
Yeah.
And Herbert Castleberg, along with Dick Bevan, who was a senior lecturer in, at Lincoln, Herbert Castleberg, they developed this course, and those students, they made a major contribution to agriculture in New Zealand. And there's recently a book published called Herbie's Boys, and Herbie Castleberg would go around the schools and he would pick out from the sixth and seventh forms the best top students, both academic and sports wise. And the VFM role is littered with people like that, one of whom that I recall and was a student of mine at one stage, Wilson Winneray. And a whole section of people like that who carved out a big name for themselves in the good use of government money into agriculture.
Wasn't he an All Black as well?
Oh, yes.
Wilson, yeah.
Captain of the All Blacks for years.
That's right, he was.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then, so you were teaching at Massey and doing research at Massey at the same
Well,
time?
No, I did no research. That was the only bit of research I ever did was an inquiry into the Featherston County. We had, by this stage, Massey had employed a professor of farm management, who had been an earlier student at Massey, had been over to Australia, to America, and he was a statistician and a very, very smart fellow. He came back and got the first position as Professor of Farm Management at Massey. And, name's just gone wrong. I know him as well as one thing. The first thing that he did was go round all the students who had recently completed master's degrees at Massey, like Wayne Cartwright, like Bob Townsley, like these were people who were in the 50s who had completed master, and he raked them in to do further study at Massey. They might have been bachelor students or might have been masters. And some of those have gone on, like Professor Bob Townsley, one of his students. The professor was Will Candler, Professor Wilfred Candler, and he wasn't like your old brand of farm management lecturer. He wasn't of the Albert Flay lecturer type person, for whom farming was the thing, having one of his own, at least one of his own, and perhaps most of his thoughts went in that farm. But along came the new breed of person introducing science and mathematics to farm management. So Will Candler...
And this was about when?
This would be in the... Might have been 1960s, the 60s, about the 60s.
Yeah.
So farm management took a major change at that stage. I certainly had no bent to do research work. I had no encouragement to do it. I didn't know what it was all about in farm management.
I thought when it was an agricultural college, there wouldn't have been so much pressure on staff to do research and publish.
Some of them did research. The economist Brian Lowe did research, and one of the things we used to have to earn a little bit of extra money at three shillings an hour was to go through some valuation rolls for Brian Lowe's PhD in farm financing. And we would get a job on a Saturday morning and we'd go through these valuation rolls. I can recall that clearly. and other research that would go on. There was a bit going on in horticulture and in dairy science, there was research going on because of the relationship with the Dairy Research Institute, the DRI.
I was going to say, what about funding? Was there much outside funding
for
research?
The funding, I know nothing about it really, but it would come from the government and a little bit from the industry. For example, the sheep farming industry, Perrin went on an overseas trip, and the result of that overseas trip was that the Cheviot was brought out to New Zealand. And I subsequently learned that he was given some South Country Cheviots. It's a great pity that he didn't get the North Country Cheviot, which is a different animal, a bigger animal, a more robust animal than the little South Country Cheviot, which we ended up in New Zealand and has since been widely used in New Zealand. And Perrin, to us, he was the professor of agriculture, and we used to laugh a little bit about Prof. Perrin. And I subsequently learned when I was in America that he went to a cattle meeting. They have these annual meetings of the American Animal Production Society. And at Red Bluff in Northern California, Perrin must have been there to one of these farm displays. And the Perrin in New Zealand wasn't noted as being a farming man. And in Red Bluff, he was slapped on the shoulder by a big American cattle breeder. My God, Perrin, you're... that was always a little joke that we had to ourselves. But not to detract from the work that Perrin did for Massey. It was absolutely tremendous.
Because he did the Perrindale, didn't he?
Perrindale,
so
yes.
What was that crossed with?
It was the South Country Cheviot and the Romney.
Yeah.
And you see, in those days, the Romney was covered in wool and could barely see with wool.
Yeah.
Wool was the thing, and of course it was very valuable. But the lambing percentage was right down, and the Perrindale was to try and remedy that a little bit.
So what about other disciplines being taught at Massey?
What
business
else?
Business and the science and the humanities and so on. Were they coming in at any stage?
Yes, like zoology. Interesting that zoology, the lecturer there was John Hamilton Tetley. And we got to know at that stage that his wife Marion Tetley was a notable artist. But only this year, or maybe leading up to last Christmas, did I realise that there was a calendar put out for 2020 by John Hamilton's paintings of John Hamilton Tetley. And he had a great interest in railway wagons. And somewhere around about Palmerston North, there's a dump of all the old railway wagons. And he had painted these. And if I could put my hand on it, I could show you this calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very nice calendar. And I came to that by an interesting circumstance. I learnt that it was available. I went into the library. Sorry, it's unavailable. Sold out. I said, oh, that's a great pity, because I was one of his students. At which a young fellow in the library came over and said to me, I'd like you to have my copy. And I said, look, no, don't worry. It won't. No, he said, I'd like you to have my copy.
Oh,
I don't have it with me, but come back tomorrow, which I did. He wouldn't take any payment, and I've got it kicking around in my office
lovely.
There.
Oh, that's very nice.
John Hamilton Tetley. Jack Tetley, they're talking about the spirit of Massey. The story I have is that Tetley was an early student at Massey, I think a first-year student, and his interest was zoology. And he was then appointed to the staff, and during the slump, he worked for at least one whole year with no pay, doing his lecturing with no pay.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
A great camaraderie. One of the lecturers was in field husbandry, W.A. Jakes, of Welsh extraction, I think. Willie Jakes. Well, Willie Jakes and his wife had no family, and they were very good at taking students home. And Willie Jakes used to make wine, and he used to keep it in the fowl house. And he would share a bottle of wine from the fowl house with the students that he'd taken home for tea or something.
So what courses did you teach?
I just taught the diploma students in farm management.
Oh, okay.
That's all I did.
Yep.
And an important part of that was our farm trips. Go back to those trips from Harry Garrett, which were really, really got me, really important.
Mm.
So on a much lesser scale, we would do that at Massey. And I shared a room with one Ern Small, E.M. Small. Now, in teaching sheep husbandry at Massey in those days, a vacancy would come up and Perrin would make a point of employing someone who was a farmer. Not a degree person, but a farmer. The first one was Morton. W.A. Morton. And well known round about the Taihape area.
Yeah.
He wasn't a gifted lecturer, but he filled the job. Then later on, the next one was Ernest M. Small. Now, I knew of Ernie Small. He worked for the Burling family around Dannevirke.
Yeah.
The Burlings were very large landholders in Wairarapa, and he must have had some connection with Perrin. So Ernest Small was appointed and to teach sheep husbandry. Had no training as a lecturer, no academic training, but he was given that job. And his heart was in Massey. He thought that trips away were important to see how farming was actually carried on. So I joined Ern Small in the room, and he was teaching sheep husbandry, I was teaching sheep farm management, and we would have these trips. And in those days, it was all done on just what you wanted to do. You didn't have some boss telling you we'll do this section and that section and you'll design. Mm. You just did what you wanted to do. So trips. For example, we might make a 3-day trip.
Mm.
And we would go up. I can recall doing one on the second year of the field days, the New Zealand field days in Waikato, away for 3 days. And we'd visit farms all round about that we had connections with, and we'd stay wherever we could find a place. It might be a wool shed. Round Taihape, it was always a wool shed.
You mean you'd all take sleeping bags, roll them out on the floor?
Yes. Okay. And you'd cook in the quarters there. And Ern Small was very good at that. If you want to cook for 50 or 60 students and spuds are on the menu, well, you boil the copper and you put the whole sugar bag of potatoes in the copper. The whole sugar bag.
Yeah.
And that's how you cook your potatoes. And when you take them out, you open the sugar bag and there's your spuds ready.
Yeah.
And another one I can... So, yeah, we had 3 days away there. And
how was this funded? The students had to pay extra?
They were all living in the hostels.
Yeah.
So all the food would come from the hostels for 3 days.
Mm.
And one of the main cooks was Joe. Joe was a Pole who had come out after the war to the Paiatua children's place there.
Yes,
yeah. Joe Stickmiler, it was. He was an interesting person. When Pope John the 23rd came out to New Zealand, before he was the Pope, the person he visited and stayed with in Palmerston North wasn't the mayor or the principal of Massey, it was Joe Stickmiler. Joe, during the war, had worked for a Polish outfit as a soldier, and there was a little book called Soldier Bear. I did have a copy of it at one stage, and this group of people that Joe was with, they had this tame bear who would live with them, and he learned how to carry ammunition, and he would carry a bit of ammunition up to the moon on the gun. Joe Stickmiler was in the he was the main cook, and Joe was a good Catholic, as it was borne out by the visit from the Pope. But on a Sunday, the Catholic boys at Mass, he would bike into Mass, and Joe would always insist that there was some breakfast left over for them. Didn't matter about the Anglicans and Presbyterians. Make sure that my boys have got a breakfast waiting for them.
Yeah.
Well, and his wife was a stylish lady, a plump lady, and she always rode a bike. And they were well known. I don't know how we got on to that.
That's on your trips around the farms.
The trips around the food. So you'd tell the hostels, we'll be away from Wednesday till Saturday, and we'll have these number of meals, and the bus, the Madge bus in those days, the old grunty Madge buses that would grind up these hills, you would open the back and put in these boxes of food, one for Thursday, one for Friday, and then you'd stay anywhere.
Yeah. Now, by about the late 1990s, there were all sorts of restrictions. If you do any trips, what about safety and what's permitted and what is, were there anything like that that you had?
No, there was nothing like that in those days, but and that is what killed the visits away. That and the fact that students by the late 90s, they were paying for their tuition, and they weren't much so interested in seeing a farm in Waikato as getting another credit, a bit more towards their degree. So the whole thing sort of went out the window. Yeah. The fellow who took over from me, Warren Anderson, who's now since retired, he thinned those down to one-day visits. For example, one we used to do was getting to know an area. So, and Warren has an excellent... I went with him on one trip that he had about farming in Manawatu, starting off down towards Foxton, coming up through Linton, through Longburn, staying at the Callison's place there, getting a story about processing farm goods, go on through the Manawatu River with the Horizons people, go up into the hill country. And in that day, an absolutely excellent introduction to this area here. But those trips have all gone out now. For various reasons, yes.
Do you think the students change during your time? Did the type of student change, or their approach, outlook?
Oh, yes, it did, no question about that. There was the early students in the 30s who were sort of mainly interested in staying alive. It must have been pretty harrowing there with very little money and very few textbooks or anything like that. There was quite a good library at Massey, and the librarian, the lady who was Mrs. M.G. Campbell, who had a penetrating voice and you could hear her elsewhere on the campus, she was a very important part of the academic side of the year. But the students have changed. They were changing all the time, becoming more and more academic. Well, there were more books to read. Would be one reason for that. And the lecturers that they had were like my first professor in farm management, Will Candler. When he did his degree at Massey, just 2 years after me, in the early 50s, there was next to no books about farm management. But he went over to the States, and Heady, Earl Heady, in the States, E.O. Heady, I think it was, at Iowa State University, was one of the first people to try and quantify things about farm management, to try and get a few principles beforehand about it, about decision making and about risk. So he was bringing in an economic viewpoint to farm management, and Will Candler just loved this, soaked this up. Will was a major statistician in his own right, and produced a book with Earl Heady So that became the book for farm management. Interest to people like me, I'd read the book and I'd get to the bit about the statistician part of it. I'd skip that. No, I don't even know anything about that. So farm management was changing completely.
Yeah, I think a lot of professional areas moved, like people working in local authority planning departments. At one stage it was more a technician planning permissions and things, but then it evolved to university degrees and a whole broader base of, of study. So probably there was the same thing at going through with Massey.
Absolutely.
But also early on, though, you're talking about a lot of New Zealanders who became, who moved on to become staff members at Massey. But then a lot of them, they went overseas and came back with a much international exchange then as
very much
part of your training. Yeah,
very much. That, for example, McMeekin went to Cambridge in England. And then came back here. I'm just thinking
about the Rhodes Scholars, others. So
yes, there was certainly they were going overseas. Yeah.
Did you get many from overseas being appointed to be in staff positions?
Not a lot. No, not a lot. The not a lot. Sort of very few in the 40s and 50s. But as you get later on, when Massey became a university, by then, in the 60s and certainly in the 70s and later, a lot of overseas people coming and going. And students coming and going.
Yeah. And that would have changed the nature of the culture of the university?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But for the better or just different, you
think? I think if you look back now, it was inevitable. The world was becoming more, I call it knowledgeable, but whether that's the right word or not, but there were more facts coming, more factual information was becoming available. And
so what about the attitude in the agricultural side? There's the question of farmers, do they have respect for these academics, and are they just ivory tower people, or they really know what's going on?
Earlier on in those days, in the 40s, 50s, maybe 60s, no, the attitude was very much like my brother. My eldest brother was a farmer, been to the war, came back, got his own farm, and here's his young brother Peter gets a job at Massey in farm management. Farm management? What do you know about farm management? You've never been on a farm in all your life. You've been at Massey. That was the attitude. And there was a few farmers who... The great example that I can look back on now is the Daniels. Now, I lived in a valley outside Masterton, the Biddeford Valley. I can clearly recall as a young nipper being told by my mother on a Sunday, oh, you must take a cold drink out to Mr. Daniel. Mr. Daniel had a farm, a very poor farm, fertility-wise, up the valley, and he was bringing down some straggly lambs to eventually get them to sale in the Masterton sale yards by Wednesday. And he'd go from holding paddock to holding paddock. That was Mr. L.T. Daniel, a moving force in the top dressing industry of New Zealand. We'll come back to him kneeling down about looking at top dressing. Today, his great-grandson is Derek Daniel, who, when he left school, was sort of laughed at a bit because he went to India to consult his guru. Derek Daniel has transformed the application of academic animal breeding to farming. Absolutely brilliant. He's got farms in Australia, I think South America, I think England, and the farm that old Len Daniel had in the valley in Wairarapa. He sells thousands of rams throughout the world. So that change has taken place sort of within a bit of my lifetime.
Yeah.
Now, one of the good points about Massey was the establishment of the Dairy Research Institute alongside Massey.
DRI,
Dairy Research Institute, which is now taken over by Fonterra. But the DRI, I can't tell you the original establishment of DRI, but there later on, as it was becoming well known, one of its directors was Arthur Ward, A.H. Ward, who got on very well with Professor William Riddett, the vice principal at Massey. And there was an institution set up, Dairy Research Institute, across the road from Massey. And they were doing great research work on all aspects of dairy processing. And I can recall the I'll quote you the sentence from our dairy, not physiology, from our bugs, he would know about viruses. Dickie Waters, and the quote was, to Whitehead and Hunter of the DRI, we are something for our present day knowledge of the bacteriophage. Well, the bacteriophage now is assuming enormous proportions in attacking bacteria. Tonk Whitehead and Hunter. To Whitehead and Hunter, we acknowledge our present-day knowledge of the bacteriophage. At the DRI back in the 30s and 40s. So Massey and the DRI were virtually an entity. Now, the DRI, the Dairy Research Institute, had the ground floor, had half the ground floor at Massey. And at the corner was Prof. Riddett's office. And the rest of that was the DRI. It had some notable people.
This is part 4 of 6. Listen next week for part 5.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.